I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to Podcast Season 8, Episode 14. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Jonathan Kuhlein in Florenceville, Bristol, New Brunswick, Earth, Canada, Earth, Solar System, Milky Way, Universe, I think. Did I miss something?
Yes. somewhere out there in all those aspects and universes, could somebody see if they can find my beard? Hello there, kids.
All right. Yes, it's Movember for those of you playing along or transporting at home. And we also have Hyman Olympus Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
It's going pretty well. Well, I'm kind of tired, but you know, it is what it is. Okay, but anyway, we were talking just before the show here about, you know, Star Trek and where things are going or whatever. And I didn't want to say it until we were actually recording, but I saw a tweet today by Anson Mount saying goodbye to the set on, or not the set, but the stages on, in Mississauga where Strange New Worlds is filmed. So I guess that means they've wrapped up production or filming, I should say. Hmm. Yeah.
Well, hopefully that means we'll get season 4 sooner than later. I mean, they've been teasing us with it since summertime this year, so.
Yeah, who knows? All that Paramount money, right?
Yeah.
Paramount Skydance, kind sir.
Skydance, yes.
That's right.
All right. Cool. All right. Well, we do have a fact check from last week. I mentioned that Fantastic Four First Steps, or somebody mentioned that it was coming out on Disney. And I was worried that the 3D version would be withheld because it wasn't available in 3D on when it was available to be bought before it became published by Disney Plus. But I'm pleased to say that I watched it in vivid 3D on the Vision Pro, and it was like I remembered. I don't know if either of you have watched the show yet or the movie yet.
Not in 3D.
No, not had an opportunity to see this one yet.
Oh, okay. Okay. So what did you think about the overall spoiler-free plot there, Jonathan?
It was very Fantastic Four. It felt like a very Fantastic Four story. It was both family-centric and also pretty cosmically weird, yeah. Which is kind of the two hallmarks of Fantastic Four stories. So it felt very true to the origins and evolution of the stories for those characters. I can't say I loved every bit of it. I feel like they kind of undersold Evan Moss Bacharach's thing. I don't think he really got as much development as I would have liked to have seen. But overall, I thought it looked really great. I thought, you know, some good action, stuff like that. It was just, I mean, it was a solid B. It wasn't a home run, but it was good.
What do you think about the retro futurism that they sort of played out in the Earth sort of idea?
Yeah, which again, I think sort of aligns with sort of where they told the stories in the 60s. It had a very Jack Kirby feel, which is kind of what you...
But it's supposed to be like modern day, right?
It is, but it's supposed to be like, what if from that point, you know, they...
People still wore fedoras and long coat. And...
Yeah, exactly. So it's both a throwback and so neo-futuristic at the same time. So yeah, it was... Like I say, it was good. I liked a lot about it. It's a bit of a weird one too, because they're not going to give the characters the full sort of Avengers build up to Doomsday or to Endgame, where like we get, you know, multiple appearances and we get to know them and we get to really care about them. Because next thing we're going to see them in is the two new Avengers movies. So we're kind of, this is really all we have to get used to them, and that's a bit unfortunate. But but I mean, they're all really good actors, and I'm sure they'll fit in well. It's just going to be kind of a, hey, here's your new characters, and go.
I kind of wonder if they're going to be like, do you remember that show? I knew his name until I started talking. The one where the kid brought up in the bomb silo, and he comes out, and everything he lives as if everything's in the 50s.
Oh, Blast from the Past, yeah.
Blast from the Past, yeah, that kind of.
Yeah.
How are they going to dovetail? Like, at one point, you know, this is kind of a spoiler, but at one point they were talking about, you know, moving the Earth, their Earth.
To a different dimension.
I thought they were going to be coming into our, you know, our timeline sort of thing. I thought that was where that was going in the middle of the movie sort of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, how are they, because I kept thinking, like, they don't fit with the, you know, the cell phone toting Avengers, right?
Yeah, although having knowledge about the overall sort of storyline that they're trying to tell in Avengers Doomsday and Avengers Secret Wars that are both coming out in the next couple of years, I think there will be a way for the universes to be more merged going forward. So
Is that big bad going to come back at some point? Or
that would be interesting. I mean, in the original 1980s Secret Wars story, which is not the story on which this is Secret Wars is based, they're basing it more on the more modern take on Secret Wars. The big bad from Fantastic Four First Steps is part of that. So the idea is they basically kind of bring all the good guys and all the bad guys together, and they all have to kind of duke it out. So if that's the case, that could make for a pretty epic and large scale kind of story to be told. So
yeah. Does the Fantastic Fifth play a part in the Fantastic Four comics?
Oh yes.
Oh really? Okay.
Oh yes. Yep.
Yeah. So I used to watch the TV show back in the day, and I also used to read the comic in the '70s, I guess.
Yeah.
About 60s, 70s. But yeah.
Yeah, in the 1980s, in the comic books, Sue and Reed have a baby, the first one they have. They end up having two eventually, but the first one that, well, they have two and then they have a stillborn, which is a really sad story. But they have Franklin, and it's kind of known, just like it is teased in this and in the movie, that Franklin is because of his genetics, is going to become a supremely powerful person. So that I think is going to sort of cascade across the next few stories, is that this child will have some pretty big role to play.
Yeah, and he's kind of, I guess he's got like the baby in Incredibles 2, right? The
little, yeah, baby boy. Like Jack. Doesn't really know how to control it, but has pretty big powers.
Yeah, Jack, right? Yeah,
Jack.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I didn't want to spoil it for Jaime, so.
No, this is good. How do you apologies. Do, I did not have an opportunity to watch that, but I guess semi-spoilers, I do have a pick that was a Halloween one, because it's been a minute for me on the show, as well as my punishment, Cats 2019. So.
I am looking forward to that very much.
I don't know if I've talked about this at the time when I first saw the show, the Fantastic Four, and talked about it on this show, but the Halloween mask that the kids are wearing, and they've got the thing Halloween mask. That was a thing back when I was a kid. That was that was the mask nobody wanted. It was always in the remainders bin at the Miracle Mart or, you know.
Yeah.
Eaton's over the bay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. But some kids did. I knew some kids who did wear it. So it was an easy costume, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anywho, let's move on to the headlines. And Jaime's got a whole handful of things for us.
Yeah, you know, it's coming up on the end of the year, so there's usually the new year, new you kind of thing. But, you know, Apple TV Plus is now simply Apple TV. And as this article from The Verge says, it has a new sound, which I've actually seen. We're going to talk about Pluribus, and so I've finally seen the new sound. But we have it here. The article from The Verge says that Billie Eilish's brother Phineas is the one who composed this, multiple versions for the long version, the sort of quick tag, and etc. It's very different than the sort of pitch black, you know, musical composition of like doom, you know, just kind of simple. This one sounds slightly more cheerful, vaguely, and people in the comments here say vaguely like Windows 95 or Windows XP. Well,
that was written, that piece was written by Brian Eno, the Windows 95 sound.
Oh, okay,
that,
there we go.
That alert, you know, the bling, 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 bling thing that they do. Yeah, Brian Eno. Carry on.
Oh, I thought you were going to, who put this? This feels like a 10. Oh,
I know, I put the made by hand thing. There was also, I did notice that the logo had changed because I was running the beta version on my Vision Pro months ago, and they had changed the color, like the logo. It wasn't just the white letters on a black icon. It was sort of like multicolored kind of thing, like the sort of in keeping with where they're going, sort of rainbow colors, right? And then I guess just about the time Pluribus started coming out, we started seeing the new flippy logo with the sound that you're talking about, right? And a lot of people looked at this thing, and sometimes we'd look at Apple stuff and we kind of like, ooh, I wonder how they did that in Photoshop or whatever they used it in, right? After Effects or whatever. But apparently in this video that I've got here, they actually used large pieces of frosted glass shaped like apples and the word TV. And they animated that. The whole animation is actually done with practical effects, right? So it's kind of cool the way. And so that little flippy icon you see in the beginning of the TV shows now, like Pluribus or whatever, that's actually pieces of glass lit from above, behind, below with multicolors. It's cool.
It is cool that like they did it old school. I thought for sure it was CGI.
Yeah.
Just because why wouldn't it be? Who's crazy enough to spend money on something like this? Do Apple. It like, yeah, exactly.
No, it's pretty cool.
We got a whole bunch of stuff that's coming back. So we were concerned on this very show of like, hey, Alien Earth had a pretty good first season, but semi-spoilers, definitely does not resolve by the end of its season. And it was like, well, we haven't heard any announcement yet. Is it coming back? That's kind of a big, you know, a big risk as a producer, a creator, to say, hey, like, let's just assume it will come back. And thankfully, it is. They're filming in London next year. And where are they? Did they have a target here yet? I don't think they set a target in this article. Maybe there's further news, but guess what? Alien Earth is coming back for a second season on FX.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't end up like, I mean, not that it was bad, but the Westworld, like, where it kind of like the first season was amazing. And then they kind of like, you know, went down, like, because it was amazing in terms of how it turned around. And this one was amazing to the point where the symbionts, for lack of a better word, kind of like start taking over kind of thing, you know?
Right.
Like the planet, right. Like the first Planet of the Apes movie was amazing. And then the rest were kind of like just beating the same dead horse, you know?
Yeah, there's definitely more story there to be told. And, you know, I don't know that I'd want this series to go for like six seasons in a movie, but you know, I think two or three seasons would be good.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have an defined arc that they go through.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it being three seasons as a logical, like, this was about setting them up, the next one's about them sort of discovering themselves, and then, you know, maybe having some failures, and then the ultimate resolution. But I guess it depends on how much time, money, and effort they want to put into this stuff, and how much money it's making them back. But I mean, I think it's done a good job of sort of moving Alien back into the spotlight, too, because, you know, TV just hits different than movies now. Mm-hmm.
The next one here is a movie series that we have said goodbye to for a while. So we thought Toy Story 3 was the end. And then they said, you know, one more, right? Toy Story 4, Toy Story Reloaded, Resurrections is a better one. Now there is a fifth one, that the first teaser trailer for Toy Story 5 has come out. So lots of people are clowning on the idea of like somehow Woody returned as a, I guess, spoilers for Bo Peep and Woody kind of go off into the sunset, right, and separate out from the rest of the toys. So I'm like, yay, they're sentient beings. They can always come back and visit, right? Sure, why not? I see how to get there. But now the big challenge is, so what happens when you have a much more modern world where old school toys like Buzz Lightyear and Woody have to share the stage? With a little tablet, an iPad-like, or those like
Leapfrog. It was called
Leapfrog. Thank you. Yeah. Leapfrog type device. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I didn't even know there was a Toy Story 4 until like a couple of weeks ago. Like I still haven't. I watched the first part of it, like you said, where Bo Peep falls out the window or whatever, and he goes after her, but I haven't got past the initial thing. Because the Toy Story 3 was kind of like Toy Story The Next Generation, where the young Andy hands over the dolls to the, or hands over his toys to another kid, right, in the neighborhood.
Yeah, he passes them along. Yeah, it's, well, I mean, the joke that I've heard that I think is the funniest for Toy Story 3 is calling it Schindler's Toy Box, because it's basically like, some of you will live and some of you will die. It's like, it's a surprisingly dark movie.
Yeah, that's the one with the big teddy bear in the daycare center, right?
Yeah, that's, yeah. Right.
Wasn't that Kelsey Grammer?
No, I think it was Ned Beatty, wasn't it?
Oh, maybe, okay.
Yeah, because Kelsey Grammer was the...
The prospector.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay.
But, yeah, no, four is good. Actually, I enjoyed four. It's like a good story. Although as Jaime points out, it does kind of leave in an unusual place to follow with a sequel. So who knows how they will bring that all together. They'll be making these movies as long as the movies keep making money.
Yeah. Well, again, like, I guess we'll watch them too. But yeah, there we go. Cool.
Yeah.
Next one up here is the sequel to the Super Mario Brothers movie. The Super Mario Galaxy movie now has its first trailer. So they're bringing back all the folks. I mean, it's just so packed with star voices. So Jack Black returns as Bowser, and Chris Pratt and Charlie Day as Mario and Luigi. Keegan-Michael Key as Toad. Princess Peach is played by Anya Taylor-Joy. And they add, don't know... Benny Safdie off the top of my head, but he does Bowser Jr. here as a new character added in from the Mario series, and Brie Larson, Captain Marvel, as Rosalina, the other princess. So they're definitely spending the monies. There's lots of interesting stuff to see here, and I'm just shocked of, like, if you're trying to make a bazillion movies, where are you going to go with the third, fourth, or possibly fifth movie like Toy Story is established? But there you go. It's coming out April 3rd, 2026.
But doesn't Mario have a ton of, like, spin-off games?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But I'm just surprised that they squished so much into the first movie, like pulling in Donkey Kong and the kart racing. I'm like, bro, you could have done, like, 20 of those and barely even touched. You just, like, you know, sort of dribbled this out. And I don't know. Somebody somewhere has a plan.
I really like the Super Mario Galaxy games. My daughter and I played those when they were new, and so that's always had a special place for me. And it really opens up, like, they created a lot of new worlds, characters, powers.
Where you have to have the figures or whatever to play the different
characters. No, that's this one was just for the Wii back in the day. So it was all just gesture based stuff, but it really kind of opened up a lot of creativity, and they created a lot of different Mario abilities. Like, it wasn't just, you know, oh, he can, you know, put on a cape and fly and stuff like that. They created, like, a whole bunch of really funky characters, which again opens up some fun in the cartoon series too. So I think this could be really good. It looks fun. I mean, I still have not watched the first one, and it's not for a lack of want. I just kept putting it off because I thought we're going to try and watch it as a family, and we just have never gotten around to it. So I'll have to make a point to do that at some point, irrespective of everyone else.
What's it, the Galaxy movie or the first one?
The first one, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. It's not bad. And then we talked about Godzilla Monarch.
Yeah. Have you guys seen this? Yeah, this is another show that is coming back. So the second season of Monarch, Legacy of Monsters from the Godzilla, King Kong cinematic universe. Coming back for season 2, February 27th.
Does it include, what's his name?
Kurt Russell and Wyatt Russell, who plays a younger Kurt Russell, coming back. Anna Sawai, you know, all sorts of folks coming back. So I kind of forget where things left off. So just as usual, I really wish the streamers would just provide a little recap episode to just recap the thing. Otherwise, like me, you just go on YouTube and say, give me a recap of this season, and I watch it maybe 15, 20 minutes right before starting season 2.
So. Before it starts, yeah. I vaguely remember where it ended up. They ended up back in the place where they were. Yeah, it was a good show. I don't know. Did you watch it, Jonathan?
No, I haven't. I'm a little behind on my Godzilla-ing because I haven't seen Godzilla Minus One yet, which I'm a little bit embarrassed about.
I haven't either, so there you go.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I mean, by all accounts, really good. I know, Jaime, you gave it a pretty glowing endorsement.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, I honestly kind of prefer most of the in the past story. So kind of like Better Call Saul, where you see stuff in the past and then you sort of smash cut into the present day to see what's going on, which is why you have Wyatt Russell playing a young Kurt Russell and then Kurt Russell just being Kurt Russell, right? I mostly prefer the in the past stuff was going on in the 1950s, certainly for the nostalgia vibe, but also the stuff of like, how did they figure out some of these things? What would you do if you were a military and said, how do we defend against freaking kaiju, right? So pretty fascinating there. That's not to put any, bad claims on the present day stuff. I just kind of prefer to have more. So I'm really glad to see that Wyatt Russell is returning. So we'll get to see more of the in the past stuff as well.
Cool.
And the Godzilla Minus One, that's the one with, what's his name? Is that the one with, what's his name? Englishy sort of, oh, maybe it's not. There's no American actors in this one?
No, this was the Japanese produced movie.
Oh,
you may be thinking of Godzilla 2014, maybe with like Bryan Cranston or something.
There was a couple of them, right?
Yeah. But the Godzilla Minus One is sort of like, I guess, like a reboot ish of the original Godzilla from the 1950s.
Yeah.
Rounding things out here for, you know,
you mean rounding home?
Oh, crap. Sorry. I'd opened up all these links and went away, ate dinner, and I didn't realize you added one. I thought mine was last one, but apologies. Well, guess what? If you paid for the MLS season pass, you won't have to do so. Starting in 2026, Apple says, you know what? MLS, those games, those are included with Apple TV service. Very similar to what they're going to be doing with the F1 racing stuff. So they continue to have the games, but they're not going to be charging you extra for it.
So F1 will be free?
F1 streaming for Apple TV subscribers. Can't remember if we covered that story or not. But,
yeah, I think we talked about it previously. Did we?
During when the movie came out as well? I think they announced it at the same time.
Yeah. Maybe this is a good time for a quick aside from the three of us. What exactly is Apple TV's plan? what exactly are they doing? Like they're nibbling around the fringes of stuff, and then they're throwing all their weight behind stuff, but there's like no consistency to it.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Like MLS seemed like, you know, this is seemed like a home run for MLS, not for Apple necessarily, although maybe I'm underestimating the value of the television rights for MLS.
It's well, are there ads in the MLS? There aren't ads in the MLS games on Apple TV, are there?
I mean, it's not like they take a break specifically for that, but they put it into the signage on the field. Like the digital signage that you see in stadium is, you know, regular digital signage. But if you are watching it, you know, if you're watching a Seattle Sounders game, but you happen to be, in Minnesota, you're not going to see Seattle-based ads. You're going to see Minnesota-based ads, and the Seattle people will see Seattle-based ads. Yeah.
Wait, in the Apple TV game,
like you know how there's like the ring of signs around the perimeter.
Yeah, yeah.
So those are increasingly digital in the like LCDs, and so just you know print them out on poster boards kind of thing in the real world, and then through the magic of CGI, just like they put all the little graphics on there, They
photoshopped them in.
Photoshop,
like,
I couldn't
think of the word. Like during the Blue Jays series, they had like the big 2025 on top of the Rogers. There is no big giant 2025 signage. Mm. So the reason I asked that is because I thought that the whole idea behind sports was because you've got bums in seats, you want to put advertiser dollars in front of those bums in seats, right?
You do. So they actually are still ads in the stadium, and then they use digital technology to change them depending on
the market. Sure,
who's broadcasting them? Yeah,
no, I get that. That's brilliant. That's wonderful. It's just like when I watch a not that I ever watch an NFL game, but when I watch an NFL game, I notice that the play markers are on the field, even though they're not really there, right?
Yep.
So,
yep.
But Yeah, I just don't they do those, you know, changing the pitchers? Because I noticed during the playoff games, now that I'm an expert on baseball, having watched the Blue Jays run, you know, they would, when they changed the pitchers, they would go and show you six commercials, right? On the TV, on the regular cable-ish TV, whatever.
Yeah, but soccer, no matter what league it is, soccer is a much more free-flowing game. There are no breaks, right? There's only a halftime. So yeah. I would imagine at halftime, they will probably maybe have some sponsorship or something else. Although, again, like, this is the benefit
MLS isn't baseball. I was thinking MLS was baseball.
No, Major League Baseball MLS is MLB. Is
soccer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the issue with MLS is that you basically play two 45-minute halves, so there really isn't a lot of spot for commercial product display anyway. So it kind of makes sense from an Apple perspective. Like, they don't need the advertising dollars. It's not really a huge priority. And F1's kind of the same thing. It just kind of starts and continues and ends. There's no breaks short of, like, you know, accidents and stuff
rain
like that.
Rain delays or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. So you kind of just, it just kind of keeps moving. It's not like, you know, basketball that has timeouts or baseball that has inning splits or football that has, you know, play resets. You know, even hockey, obviously, you know, commercial breaks and, you know, whistles and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Those two sports seem to make the most sense from a streaming perspective.
Well, but it's ridiculous when you actually add a game and you notice how long they're taking for a break. It's like, I mean, having played hockey, it's unnatural the amount of times they take breaks and go and clean the snow off the.
Well, and you're just standing there, or they'll have like some nonsense on the Jumbotron while you're trying
or to they
just,
blast t-shirts at you or something. Exactly.
Yeah. So this is an interesting one too. So coincidentally today, they also announced MLS that they're changing their calendar. So the thing that has distinguished MLS is that they played more for a summer-based schedule, spring, summer, fall, because of North American weather, which makes sense. They announced today that they're going to reorganize starting in 2027, where they're going to adopt a summer to spring season more like the rest of the soccer leagues on the planet, who all play in more temperate areas. And so the season will start in the fall, summer, I guess, and it'll end in the spring, and they'll have their summers off, which means there's one less piece of content for summer, and also means that it's going to be happening coincidentally with the baseball end of season and playoffs, football starting in the United States and Canada, full hockey season, full baseball season. So, like, I guess I understand from a logistical point of view why they've done this, but now it's also MLS is going to be going head to head, A, with snowstorms in some cities, and B, with you know, head to head with NBA, NFL, NHL, you know, Major League Baseball for stretches. Like, it's a tough fit. I'll be really curious to see how this works out for them.
So what happens in, like, I do know that there's Major League Baseball and I think hockey on Apple TV now too, right? But what happens during, are they like regular broadcast TV things, or what do they do for revenue?
For those two sports?
Yeah, on Apple TV. Like, I noticed, like, I could watch the Blue Jay game on Apple TV, or I could watch the, is it just a rebroadcast of the Fox TV show, or?
No, I don't think so. I think they're doing their own things, but.
Have you watched any sports on Apple TV, Jaime, or Jonah?
Just the MLS. Friday Night Baseball for MLB.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, baseball.
And MLS stuff. I've not seen other sports, I don't think.
Yeah.
So what do they do during the baseball games?
So when would normally be a commercial break, they either go back up into the booth and the broadcasters talk to each other, or they like just show you stuff on the field, players changing, whatever. They don't go to a commercial break because they don't have to.
Mm. Okay.
Which, again, it's like a giant middle finger from Apple. Like, we don't need your advertising revenue.
Yeah. Interesting.
But yeah, it's all part of this sort of confounding service that Apple is creating, where like they're creating all these shows, some of which are fantastic, but don't really get the same kind of attention because it's not in the same stratosphere as Disney Plus or Netflix or even Amazon Prime, just because of the embedded audience. And then, they really haven't, they don't to me seem like they have a really cohesive theory of what they're doing. It almost seems like it's kind of willy-nilly, but I don't know. Yeah. I don't understand it.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. Well, I guess I'll move on to my thing, which is I just saw before we started recording, maybe an hour or so before, that Fallout Season 2 trailer has dropped today. And there's a couple of things, and then Macaulay Culkin's in there. Kyle MacLachlan obviously is a bit more in there than he was in the first season, right? Have either of you guys watched the show, Fallout?
Yeah, yeah. I saw the first season when it came out.
Jonathan, did you watch it?
No, it's still on my to-do list. I figured once I knew season two was coming, I figured then I could invest. Seemed a little perilous when it first came out. I was like, this seems weird. I wonder if it'll even make it to a season two. But yeah, now it's definitely on my to-do list.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting show. It's got, it's got some of the Silo type mystery to it. There's some backstory stuff that we're not hearing, but I guess if you play the game, you would have known, but I have not played that game. But it's been around for a long, long time. Oh, cool. Anyway, so that's in the trailer in the show notes. And how about you, folks? All right, well, that brings us to the main part of the show. We talk about something Star Trek related, and we're still continuing our rewatch of the original animated series. We're going to talk about episode 12 and 11 and 12. And then we're going to do Pluribus, which turns out to be a sci-fi show. So, yeah, we're covering season 1, episode 11, the Turretin incident, I think it's called, and the time trap. So the Turretin incident. Take it away.
Gulliver's travels in space.
Was it Gulliver's travels or was it?
I mean, it was kind of that. I did a little bit of reading to try and figure out. Apparently, it was yes. It was a one paragraph story idea written by Gene Roddenberry that got turned into a story. So. Yeah, the idea was that he liked the idea of little people and what can you do with little people. So I got a real like Bottle City of Kandor Superman vibe from this one. I don't know if you guys know that reference, but there's a city from Superman's home planet of Krypton that was saved and miniaturized. And so there are Kryptonians living, but they basically live in this bottle.
Yeah, it's under glass, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I kind of, the vibe I got from this one was, you know, when they started with the mystery of like this blast hits them while they're investigating this planet. And then all of a sudden they all start shrinking and they are not sure why. And they're trying to figure it out. And it turns into kind of this, yeah, a little bit of this sort of like, you know, what do you do if you're too small to reach the controls?
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Apparently everyone turns incredibly clumsy is what happens. Cause like Sulu falls down and breaks his leg and Chapel falls into the fish tank and almost drowns. I'd like to give them a huge shout out for using the, the looped playing of Majel Barrett's help, help, help. Yeah. Help over and over again as she's like drowning. You know, apparently swimming lessons are not mandatory in Starfleet. But
I thought this is the one where they turn in, where Spock and Kirk turn into like underwater people. Is that the one?
No, Turretin is the one with they get hit with the beams and they start shrinking, right?
Well, maybe maybe I watched the next one after that.
And it turns out that they're actually space colonists who got stuck on this planet and got sort of shrunk down, and now they can't.
Okay, I was mistaken. I watched episode 13. I watched ahead or whatever.
So you're ready for next week?
Okay, I am ready for next week. Let's talk about next week. Show. Okay, so yeah, this is the shrinky shrink one.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yep, cool. Yep. But yeah, again, it was really funny too because I found myself at the beginning of this episode, I was kind of impressed with how sort of not dumbed down and scientifically vaguely accurate it was. You know, they were talking about DNA strands, they were talking about, you know, actual science. And I was like, man, you know, for a show from 1973, you know, they're not dumbing it down. They're not talking down to the audience. They're not spoon feeding them. They're doing what Star Trek always did. They're kind of, you know, mixing real science with sort of future tech gobbledygook. And I was like, this is pretty good. And then they, later in the episode, they beam Kirk down to this planet and he's like exploring the planet while like active volcanoes are going off and lava's flowing past him. And I'm like, yeah, science is somewhere went out the window here. Cause he would have been like, you know, asphyxiated and or vaporized at some point during all this, but, sure.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of Land of the Giants. You ever watch that show?
I don't think so.
It was basically Gilligan's Island. These people got onto this sort of spaceship futuristic, you know, thing, and they travel around and they end up crashing, and where they crash is the land of the giants. And so they're all tiny, you know, like bobby pins are like, you know, 10 stories tall, and they put them, when they capture them, they put them inside beakers and stuff like that. It was all done with, like, you know, practical in camera effects and stuff like that. And yeah, it was pretty cool, trashy show from, like, it was from 68 to 70 apparently, but yeah, I watched it like religiously. Yeah. But the kind of same sort of thing, you know, with giant cats chasing these little tiny people, right? It's like, you know, there's like a couple of pilots, and there was like a kid and a, you know, good looking lady and a, you know, various
the
people.
Movie
and,
star,
and there was a sort of Dr. Smith type character. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Jaime, what did you like and dislike about this one?
Yeah, I think this one is a pretty fun way to make use of the animation, right? You do something that would be way harder to do with the original series. But I think this, the same kind of concerns that that you had are where I share.
The improbability?
Yeah. I mean, it does take the, like, all right, so Terra 10 was the space colony that, you know, these guys wandered into this area and they shrunk. Okay. If you just take that, then it's like, it's kind of fun seeing them be like, hey, I need you to do this thing, bro. I can't reach the control panel. What do you want me to do? I'm getting too small to do it.
Yeah. I think this one was a fun notion, and you're right. I think this is a good example of how you can use animation to your advantage, right? Like, they didn't have to rebuild the sets. They didn't have to, you know, do all kinds of, you know, whatever, special effects and whatever. It was just like, yep, this is fine. Okay, I have a question for you. I'm both impressed and a little bit sort of weirded out by the fact that, like, so many different characters have different skin tones. So, like, even Kirk and Bones don't have the same skin tone, which credit to them, which is fair. Like, you know, I'm going to stand in defense of Caucasian people, which is really not where I want to be, but we're not all the same color. We've got some shades, not a lot, but we got some. Mm-hmm. But Spock is yellow, and I find that a little weird.
Well, he's supposed to be green.
I mean,
he has green blood, right?
I guess he looks distinctively different. And I every time they show him, especially standing next to the other characters, I'm like, oof, this feels vaguely racist, and I'm not sure why.
Well, that is keeping in tradition, because I do not recall which episode this is, but I'm pretty sure it's one of those we went back in the past episodes, or we went to a planet that is based on a book from the past. And I think Kirk introduces Spock as Chinese. Am I wrong about that? I swear this happened.
Is this like the whole Data is French running gag?
It's one of those. I'm gonna have to look that up.
Well, even in the next episode of Time Trap, the Klingons are very brown.
Yeah, right? They are pretty distinctively Middle Eastern looking.
Well, I don't know, Middle Eastern. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Like, they're not black. They're not African. They look much more like. Like stereotypes of Middle Eastern.
Well, and there's another Vulcan, and there's also an Andromeda lady, right? In fact, there's a whole series of them.
Yeah.
There's even a Gorn, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see. According to the internet here, City on the Edge of Forever is where Kirk and Spock run into an Earth police officer. And Kirk says that Spock is Chinese and that his ears have been caught in a mechanical rice picker. So making him yellow or yellow tinted for the green skin, sorry, the green blood, and yeah, you know, introduced as being Chinese, I'm like, in TOS, I'm like, it tracks.
okay.
Yeah. As a reminder, you know, we get into late 90s, early 2000s, and the Andorians, like Jeffrey Combs' Shran character, calls the humans, the Earth folks, as pink skins. And we always kind of wondered, does he say that to Mayweather as well?
Yeah.
Or Hoshi?
Yeah. 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 Like, you're all pink skins. Not you two.
Yeah.
Okay, you want to slide over to the Time Trap, which may have been even weirder?
Sure. Yeah, that was a sort of... they end up in this graveyard, and
the Bermuda Triangle, basically.
Yeah, and there's all these other survivors from other ships, and there's like they've formed this council thing where
some kind of, I don't know, federation of planets.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, there's a Gorn, there's a Tellarite, there's
Andorians,
there's Data looking guy. Yeah. There's some sort of lizardy guy, some sort of dog with dragon ears. Yeah, I'm just looking at a picture actually here in my IMDb database, but they get trapped in this thing and nobody can get out of it, right?
Yeah.
And of course, you know, the only way to get out of it is the Klingon and the Klingon warship and the Enterprise join together, and Spock acts as the intermediary to convince the Klingons to join them, and of course the Klingons have a plot and they're going to blow up do something bad to the Enterprise when they get through the time barrier or whatever it was, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
it's a weird one too, because they basically and the Klingons get sucked into this, you know, other place, and then they discover all these other people there, and the other people are like, we've been here for years, so long that we kind of had to work together, and we're all living in peace and harmony. We basically have a handful of rules. Behave yourselves. And Spock and Kirk and the Enterprise are like, yeah, we're going to do our own thing. And the Klingons are like, yeah, we're also going to do our own thing. And then the rest of the episode, everybody else is like, what's up with those two? And they're like, yeah, I guess they're leaving. And then they do. It's weird because they kind of build up like, this is another episode that like, and that's what I've always found about, Trek writ large, because it was so episodic, but particularly old Trek, was just this lack of resolution of like, and they met all these people and those people were never heard from again. And it's
that's why in Lower Decks, they always had the second contact.
Yeah.
Job, right?
Yeah.
And we have to go clean up the mess that Kirk and Spock left behind, right?
Yeah, like at some point, did they send a Starfleet research team to be like, let's see if we can get those other people out of there? Like, it's just it's so weird that the whole thing is like, well, you're never going to get out of here. Huh, they did. Okay.
Yeah.
But then what? And can I also just shout out the mounting maneuver that they used to power their way out of there? Where was my mind the only one that went there?
Yes, pretty much. Yeah.
I mean, come on. They basically have the Enterprise mount a Klingon starship like a pair of dogs in a field. Like, it was D7. Pretty on the nose.
I guess, yeah. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. And I kept looking at it going, where did they get that little white sort of connector thing? It's like the Soyuz Apollo mission, right? And I wonder too, you know, like you said, this is 70 something, right?
73, yeah. Fall 73.
Yeah, that was around the same time as the Soyuz Apollo mission, where they had to build this fancy docking mechanism that would connect the Soyuz to Apollo capsules. And then they met in the middle and shook hands and handed each other little banners, you know, little tiny, almost like sports teams when they meet and give the other team banners, right?
Yeah.
That was the first sort of Soviet American, you know,
space collaboration.
Yeah, and they still had bombs pointed at each other's country, right? So
yeah, well, they still do. it was a weird one. It was definitely felt a little less resolved than in the first one. The first one was like, you know, open and shut kind of case. They're like, well, we can save you guys and off you go. And this one, they're like, we made it out of there. Well, peace out, homies.
Yeah. Also notable for a Klingon woman pre-boob window. So they hadn't culturally switched to the boob windows yet.
Oh, there was a Klingon woman in there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just remember McCoy gets in trouble for trying to pick her up.
Oh, really? Okay.
You think that would be ruled now? No, I know who the captain of the Enterprise is, but like, you'd think there would be a rule about like, hey, let's maybe not try and like pick up the Klingon women because that might tick off the Klingons. Like, wouldn't that be rule number, I don't know, two? Like, that would seem pretty strange to me where they're like,
I'm seeing in the illustration of the Klingon woman, she definitely has an afro, so I don't know what that tells you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was weird because they were both coded especially the 1960s show, they were both coded as like other, as in like person of color, different in that way, but they were also coded as Soviets. So,
true. Oh, yes, right.
Yeah, so it was kind of a little bit all over the place here. You know, there wasn't as much of the sort of Soviet coding as much as there was the, you know, you're clearly not, you don't look like us. Your skin is a different color. You're, you know, you're different.
Of course, the Orion girl is scantily clad, right?
Of course she is. Of course she is.
Yeah.
I like when she's the Orion woman says, "Oh, you've seen us dance before." And Kirk says, "Many times." Like, yes, we know you're a perv, Jim. We know. We got it. We got it.
Is he on the Epstein files? I wonder.
Yeah. The space Epstein files. Oh my.
Anyway.
Yeah. These are fun. I mean, they're so of their time, you know. It's just funny because they, like, sometimes they can be very dry and very, you know, I think we talked about them being a little lacking some of the gentle touches of the humor between you know, Spock and Bones and some of that stuff. But then sometimes they sprinkle it in and it's better than others, but it just very much is like such a much more loyal sequel to Star Trek than pretty much anything else that ever came after.
Yeah. And by the way, just a real-time fact check, the Soyuz, or Apollo Soyuz mission took place in 1975, but it was being planned in 1973.
There you go. They were thinking ahead.
So, yeah. Well, I'm sure it was, you know, of the time, right?
So. Yeah.
Now, a word from our sponsor. I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Best Seller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breasts, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
Now, back to the show.
Cool. All right, well, let's move on to the new shiny show that we've all been watching, Pluribus, which is Latin for many, as in e pluribus unum is one for many, or many from one many, I think it is.
Right? Out of many, one.
Out of many, one, yeah.
That's on the back of our money.
Yeah, and anyway, so this is just, pluribus means many. So the idea behind this, so what happens is we meet Carol, yep. Who is a
romance
writer, romance writer. She's kind of like, she understands how to write the romance novels, and she and her publisher or her manager kind of seem to have a relationship together, and. She's signing books at the beginning of it, and they end up in a hotel on their way home, or and they go to a bar. And meanwhile, we also see that it starts off a bit like Contact, where there's you know the what do you call the space program, or the radios are listening
SETI.
SETI. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was going to say SETI, but I was thinking of Star. But anyway, so the SETI mission, and they decode this signal, which they find out breaks down into like a sort of binary code, and it ends up creating, I think, an alien virus, right? Or it gives them...
Well, it's basically RNA, they say at one point, right? It basically is an RNA sequence. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so they start playing with it in a laboratory. And of course, you know, they're all wearing, you know, protective stuff. And they're trying it on rats and things. And one of the rats ends up biting through the glove of one of the technicians, who then gets infected with this virus. And then... within minutes, she's infected the entire base of, army and scientists and whatever. And that's how the virus kind of takes that. And, you know, they all start working together and, you know, with big smiles on their faces. And there's no words really sort of exchanged at that point. But then, you know, we meet Carol and her partner who are in a bar, and everybody in the bar starts getting infected all at the same time, including her partner. And Carol's off doing something else. She's chasing a car that's crashed because the driver's, you know, been taken over by this virus, and they all get like cataleptic, but then they eventually come around. They got these big giant smiles on their face, and then they all start talking to Carol as like a hive mind, right?
Yeah, we are Borg.
Yeah, so it's kind of that's kind of the setup for the show, and then where we go from there is, you know, the first episode is We Is Us, right? So
yeah. I mean, basically, these people are taken over. They become this hive mind, and we find out that there are only 11 people that are immune, right?
Right, right.
And instead of being like, well, let's do them in, they
and she says, well, let me only talk to the English speaking ones because I only care about them, right?
yeah. Well, that's that comes around in the second episode, right? But I mean, would you just cover both episodes and then we'll just sort of talk about the whole shebang?
Sure. It
kind of works together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the second one is basically it starts off with, it looks like they're in somewhere in maybe the Mediterranean. And we see somebody basically just like, you know, they're cleaning up all the dead bodies. And then somebody gets on a plane. And of course, because of this shared knowledge, everybody can do everything, right? And this person, you know, flies to America, cleans himself up, and then shows up on Carol's doorstep. And it turns out that they basically found somebody who looks like one of the characters from her stories, from the cover art, and are trying to use this person to, like, make her feel more comfortable, which is pretty messed up. And, and then we find out that, you know, yeah, there are these people. She wants to meet them, but she's also, whenever she gets mad, when Carol loses her control, it seems to really affect the collective human beings who are under control. And they all sort of have this like breakdown kind of thing that happens to them. And
meanwhile, some of them are driving trucks and flying planes.
Well, that's it. We don't know what the consequences of that will be. And then as this episode plays out and she meets these other people, one of them sort of says like, you know, hey, you know, we all have our families with us. Our loved ones are with us. And, of course, Carol's alone because her partner is gone at this point. She doesn't seem to have anybody else. And, you know, everybody else, the one girl basically says, like, I want to join my family. I want them to fix this. I want to become one of them. You know, the other ones are, like, clinging to their, like, family members who, of course, are now possessed by this hive mind. And then we get this like very creepy dude who's basically turned himself into like King Pimp of the universe.
The Love King, yeah.
Who is, you know, he's taken Air Force One as his private plane and surrounds himself with supermodels and gourmet food and all this stuff, which is pretty weird. But, you know, it's really weird the way they've kind of positioned this where, you know, she's taking the position of like, well, you know, if you're aligned with the hive mind, you're betraying humanity. And they're of the mindset that like, there's nothing to be done about it. So you just got to kind of roll with it. And everybody seems to be accepting of this except for her. So she's really setting her up as like an us, you know, her versus the world kind of position. So the other startling thing that we are revealed here is that, you know, we get the sort of spokesperson for the hive mind, which is Zosia, and she reveals that the taking over of humanity ended up with 876 million people dying, which is messed. And then we find out that Carol's outburst that seemed to give them like that pause and shock and whatever killed another 11 million people. So at Carol's walking, and she at one point she makes a quip where she basically says like, "I'm the worst mass murderer since Stalin." I mean, it's a really interesting concept. This show. I mean, I think we all came into it not really understanding what they were going to be trying to do, other than the tagline that Vince Gilligan, which had teased, which is basically, "What if the worst person in the world was the last hope for humanity?" But this, I found this like pretty compelling. Like, I was really quite. You know, they use the countdown clock in the first episode, counting down to this sort of time, so you kind of have a sense of like how far out you are from things and where things are coming together. And then they start counting upwards from the time that things actually happen. And it's pretty propulsive for a first episode, especially because there are some, you know, pretty long stretches where things are quiet. You know, the part where she's trying to get Helen into the car and she's trying to get to the hospital. And, you know, there's a lot of long stretches with no dialogue, but it's still pretty engrossing. And then the second episode was you know, almost like absurdist humor, right? Like, she's like, are you effing kidding me? To all these people who are like, just so accepting of this circumstance that is so messed up. You know, it does make you immediately think, like, how would I react? And, you know, again, really good television. It makes you think, it makes you, you know, put yourself in that position and question. But
so there was I heard some analysis today on a couple of shows I listened to, and they were sort of comparing it sort of to how people are accepting or not accepting of AI in a sense too.
Like, yeah.
It's kind of thing. And the other sort of position is that it's kind of like religion in a sense, right? Like, these people are all accepting one kind of behavior and she's not, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what's your take on all this? This was weird and interesting, I thought.
The tone of the two episodes is interesting because the first one plays much more like horror. It's much more like The Last of Us, you know, when everything goes awry. And the second one is much more comedic, but still unsettling. So it's, you know, if you've enjoyed Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, where there is the funnies, the ha-has, and then the, oh my God, did that just happen? You'll definitely have that in these, you know, at least these two episodes that we've seen. The other thing I kind of appreciated was, like, I was shocked that we didn't spend the entire season, oh, where are the other people? How does she find the other people? Well, she finds them. She just straight up asks, can I meet them? Oh, what's going on with the virus? How does it? We know darn near everything about it so far, or at least we know way more than we did, you know, first season of Severance, right? Like, we didn't have a clue what was going on, really. And this is very different than that.
So I found myself thinking about this after watching the two episodes, because I really enjoyed it. And I just a major shout out to Rhea Sehorn, who I love. I think we talked about before. She was incredible on Better Call Saul. And I think it's well past due that she gets this kind of huge, meaty role. But I found myself thinking after two episodes, okay, Vince Gilligan has said he thinks this could go for four seasons. Where do they go from here? And what is an ultimately satisfying conclusion for this story? Are we supposed to be rooting for Carol to be able to restore humanity? Are we rooting for her to, you know, sort of make life difficult for the people who are now possessed by this alien RNA? Like, what's the angle of this that is the most sort of continually enjoyable and ultimately satisfying?
Yeah, it's a bit like The Good Life in a sense, right? Like, it's got that sort of
strange... Oh, The Good Place?
Good Place, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherworldly kind of society's completely on its ear kind of thing, right?
And very existential, like, because you can't help but think about, like, well, if this was the way of things, how do you fit? How do we fit? What is it to be a human being? You know, is it our autonomy that defines us? Are we us if we are, you know, in this condition? You know, are these people beyond redemption? I don't know. I don't know. What do you think, Jaime?
Yeah, I'm kind of not sure where things are going to go, because it is... All right, so you mentioned the Borg, which is great, because the Borg assimilation came to mind. But you know what also came to mind was from Rick and Morty, Rick Sanchez has Unity as a girlfriend, right? Where it's portrayed as being, you know, less taking away your individualism, less sort of brutality than the Borg, but still you lose your individuality. So...
But the whole society is like that already, right? So, like, the whole planet.
Yeah, whatever. And then you have the, what are there, six of them total that who speak English there in the meeting. And you have Carol is the only one who doesn't have a family member. And then also the dude from Mauritania, but he's clearly doing stuff with the models there.
He doesn't seem to care.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, this is totally cool. Right. Everybody
except,
else,
except when they talk about their views on consuming animals. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So there is that aspect of, like,
they said they won't kill.
They will use you know, the meat that's already in the refrigerators and freezers and stuff. And he, if he, the Mauritanian guy, if he kills something, I guess they'll go ahead and cook it up. So it's very fascinating there. And then you have the survivors, the English speaking ones, who are sort of deluding themselves. And, oh no, my son is here. My daughter, my aunt, I can't remember what the really, and sister was. And, you know, Carol is like, hey, little kid, is speculum or a metal speculum better for a pelvic exam? And he explains quite well. And I was like, yeah. See, like I curse and scream all I want in front of your kid. This is not your kid anymore. It looks like your kid. And maybe he's in there somewhere, but he's a drop of water in this ocean that this vessel is not him.
Well, and as you say, it's deeply unsettling in the second episode when she's talking with Sosia and she starts referencing things that only Helen and Carol would know. And she's like, yeah, she actually did join us for a moment before she died. So we have all her memories and they're trying to use those. That is creepy. You know, oh, we can make you breakfast. You love this particular type of thing. And she's like, get away. I don't know. I got to be honest. I mean, you know, if you've been listening to the show for a while and here we are in our, you know, 250s of episodes, you could probably pretty solidly say I would be in the Carol camp of over my dead body. But it's interesting to sort of think about, you know, yeah, like, do you go the route of the, you know, well, my family is still alive. Technically, I love them. Therefore, whatever. Do you go with the, you know, the Mauritanian guy who's like, party time? Do you go with the Carol of like, F you, this is not right? Like, yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting concept. It's a really interesting concept. And I think, you know, obviously Vince Gilligan is a genius. You know, his previous two shows have both been, you know, absolutely incredible television. So, you know, he's got a lot of latitude and it's Apple, and Apple tends to commit to these projects. They don't just do sort of one and dones very much. So right now it's sitting at 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. So that's a pretty good sign.
Okay. Yeah.
83 reviews and it's 100%, which is pretty impressive. Yeah, I mean, it's weird. There's no doubt it's weird. And as we talked about, like after two episodes to see where they could and or will go with this is really, an interesting exercise, but yeah, I mean, it's good TV.
All right. Well, let's, next episode's going to be on in a few minutes for those of us, you know, transporting it home. But let's move on to our watch list in the meantime. What do we got?
For me, this is in theaters, but you can rent. We did this through Amazon Prime Video. So it's not included with Prime. It's, you know, one of those rentals. This is Good Boy. This is we watched this on Halloween, you know, turn down the lights and everything. This is the horror movie that I mentioned about it's from a dog's perspective of what happens when creepy stuff happens in the house, ghosts, you know, goblins, that sort of thing. And it's very tense. If you want 73 minutes of just feeling dread, seeing from like your beloved doggo, like, you know, what happens when things go bump in the night? What happens when you start doing weird things? It's really solid. And it's all practical. Apparently, I'm shocked here. There was only one dog, and I think it's the filmmaker's dog. So it took them forever to do this. There's some behind the scenes stuff that you can find, but it's real solid. So I was pretty impressed with this. And looking at Rotten Tomatoes, it looks like most folks agree: 90% on the tomato meter and 82% on the popcorn meter.
Wow! Did you pay full price for the rental, or was it like a special, or?
I had those Amazon digital credits that they try really hard not to let you know how many you have. And you always have to Google search, like, how do I find how many? And so we got it for free because I had built up.
Oh, really? You mean those of us who have been buying stuff on Amazon forever might have digital credit?
Oh, no, sir. They expire. I'm not sure how quickly. I want to say it's like within 90 days or something.
How do you find them?
You do like me, and you go on Google and you say, how do I find my Amazon digital credits? And somewhere there should be a link.
Oh, cool. All right. I'll have to check a look. Cause I constantly buy stuff from Amazon.
Yeah. It's one of those, like, you know, when you normally do Prime, you get it immediately. They send it within a day or two. If you're like, nah, I don't really need this. It's just like toilet paper or dry beans, dry rice. That can wait till Monday. And yeah, you'll get like $1.50. Well, I've done that enough times with things that this was like a $10 movie, I think. I think it was $9.99, I think, rental. So I got it for free.
Yeah, it's $7.99 right now on the App Store in Canada. Yeah, I've looked at that. There's that Edgerton movies on 99-cent rental. Or I'm not sure if it's still on that. It was last week. So that's the Joaquin Phoenix movie, the new one. Yeah, cool.
Mm-hmm. Is it? I've been looking at it. And it looks like a duck tolling retriever. That's the dog in the movie. It looks like my dog. So I must admit, I'm a little curious. I don't really care for horror movies, and I certainly don't care for ones where dogs are at jeopardy. People I don't really care so much about, but dogs. But yeah, I must admit, I'm curious to see if that looks how much that looks like my dog in real life. Does it? So is it always like? Is it CGI at times, or is it always the dog?
My understanding is it's always the dog, and only the one dog. So unlike, you know, we talked about Air Bud, the revival where they'll have 2 to 4 of them that can do different tricks.
Mm-hmm.
This one was apparently just the one dog. And, you know, I'm not going to say there's no CGI there. This is a horror movie. You know, there's practical effects. But my understanding, no CGI for the dog himself. It's all 100% organic doggo.
No dogs were harmed in the making of the movie?
I'm pretty sure I saw that, but you know what? I cannot confirm without having to look online, but you know, that's so common nowadays to put the thing.
So will, my only question is, will there be a sequel?
You know, my significant other was like, oh, you know, I hope they don't make a sequel. This is so great. A standalone. I told her, babe, you know what? What I would do is a prequel. She's like, no, stop. I'm like, what do you mean? They made some, if they make money. Yeah, exactly. If they make money, this is exactly what they're going to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. All right. Now it's time for the review I've been waiting for.
Yes. so for folks who may not know, this is, you know, some weeks behind, you know, schedules and everything. Because of the bet we had during the Major League Baseball playoffs, where my Seattle Mariners went down valiantly to your Toronto Blue Jays, I had to watch Cats, the 2019 film. And we did talk going into this that, like, I mean, this was just a, you know, they say murderer's row for like the New York Yankees circa, you know, such and such. I mean, Judi Dench and Jason Derulo, Taylor Swift, Ian McKellen, you know, there's just like so many, Idris Elba, Jennifer Hudson. There's just so many people in here. And maybe the hint should have been like the Rebel Wilson, James Corden introductions, which I will definitely talk about. I cannot be bothered to figure out how many minutes it was because it felt like infinity. it was a struggle. This was also during the Halloween weekend, and I lucked out. So I had told you gentlemen I was going to have to pay money for this. That would have been true had I watched it on Halloween itself. However, I waited until Saturday. Was it Saturday? Yeah, Saturday, November 1st. And it just happened to be on Netflix in America for free. So I was like, oh, thank heavens. So the kind of elevator pitch here is, what if we took a beloved Broadway musical and just ruined everything about it? So I've not seen Cats, but, you know, listening to the music and thinking about this as spectacle and for like a 30-second aside, how many times on this show have I said, you know, don't look at Avatar or Avatar Way of Water or Avatar Burns Real Good, whatever the fire-based one is called that's coming up. Don't look at these as like films, look at them as like amusement park rides. And watching it in 3D, whether that's like Tim watching on Apple Vision Pro or if you go and watch 3D in theater, that's the real way. I've never understood how I could have enjoyed the Avatar original movie until I remind myself, but it was pretty awesome in 3D. Right? It's like a amusement park ride. So Cats here as a Broadway play. And again, I've not seen the Broadway play, but looking at the structure, like it basically has no story. Right? It's a collection of skits where every single word is sung. So unlike a lot of modern musicals where it's kind of more like a Disney movie, right? Disney animated movie where there's singing, but then there's normal words. Here, it's quite clear that everything for Cats is intended to be musically sung, except for the weird, you know, needle screeching moments of like, hey, here's James Corden and Rebel Wilson doing some funny ha-has. Like, that part made it worse, to be honest. And the real story here is, like, Victoria is this young white cat. She's abandoned, you know, like, in a bag or something by her owners in the streets. And there's this whole gang of alley cats called the Jellicle Cats. I looked it up online because I thought I blinked and missed. They never explain what a Jellicle Cat is, per se. It's just, like, their group. And they have a whole bunch of them. And it's coming up for the Jellicle Ball, where Judi Dench's character, Old Deuteronomy, apparently decides who is worthy of doing a Wizard of Oz style get in the hot air balloon and go above the clouds and get reborn and have a new life.
Okay.
And along the way, there's also Idris Elba's character, Macavity, who is a cat who literally has magic, like a dark magic, but he really only uses this magic to try to abduct the other potential candidates because he wants to be chosen as the person to go. So it's just a real, you know, I wouldn't be adding a whole lot here. There is no butthole edition, as I discovered. I looked really hard. I was like, you know what? If you're going to suffer, you might as well get all the suffering out there. There's not that, apparently, or certainly the Netflix one wasn't. But it's just this weird, uncanny valley where some look fine, like Judi Dench's Old Deuteronomy looks pretty good because she's like a bigger, fluffier cat. So it's not the lithe, you know, furry mishmash kind of body. Macavity, so Idris Elba's character, looks pretty good when he's wearing clothing and then looks absolutely terrible when they try to make him into a slinky human cat, right? It's just like so weird and off-putting. And funny enough, a lot of the scenes that take place out in the alley have this weird, I know it's supposed to be neon purple signage. It's just a really off-putting color palette. And when they have some scenes later, ironically enough, inside of a theater, I'm like, oh, this is how this is supposed to be watched. Clearly, this is supposed to be how the Broadway musical would be. You're looking at them in a theater, they look better. So in terms of best pew, 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 there is Mr. Mistopheles, another magical cat who's kind of like a good magic cat. During one of the songs, he does some minor magic, and arguably Macavity stealing the Jellicle Cat candidate is kind of cool, kind of whisks him away into like sand or dirt. I'd also have to say, like, it's kind of weird because it seems like, is the whole plot point here, like, Jennifer Hudson's character, who was an outcast because she was hanging out with Macavity and she wants to rejoin society and nobody wants her. Like, did she basically die? Spoilers. Did she basically die at the end? Because she's the one who becomes the candidate and ends up selected to live a new life. So I'm very terribly confused there. In terms of Easter egg hunt, I had already mentioned the connection in my head to the Wizard of Oz and Dorothy and the Wizard taking the hot air balloon. But I also found this weird musical tone that I'm very curious if people have watched the Broadway musical. If you've ever heard the weird cat meow plus gong plus synthesizer sound, this play predates Gremlins in 1984. Cats came out in 81. This is from 84, the play. Like if you've heard, if you know the song thing that I'm talking about from Gremlins, I really hope this comes across.
Yeah, yeah. No, I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, like that same sort of synthesizer cat sound. I'm like, was that just like a thing in the 80s? I thought it was a thing specifically for Gremlins, and now I'm like really terribly confused. Also, kind of rounding things out for the music, apparently the Taylor Swift song is an original song that she helped write, and is arguably one of the best songs, to be honest. So apologies to fans of Cats. But it's got weird stuff like Rebel Wilson like zips off her skin and that's a costume change. It's so disturbing. You're like, she just like as if she was wearing a suit, like a cat suit, but she unzips, you know, her fur skin and it comes off bloodlessly. It comes off like a coat, and then she's wearing a different costume, and then she does that again. And James Corden is basically just like, you know, goofball TV host James Corden, and not really. And neither Rebel Wilson nor James Corden are really acting in this. They're kind of just doing an SNL skit, is what it feels like.
Yeah, straight up comic relief.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
did your significant other watch this with you?
She did. She did. I told her, you don't have to. This is my cross to bear.
Punishment. Yeah, yeah.
She's
yeah.
like, no. She's the one who's into musicals, and she wasn't really like that jazzed about this either. So, you know, if even a fan of musicals is like, yeah. Here's the thing. I told her, look, I believe there is a Cats movie that is just like the Hamilton quote unquote movie. Like the
play. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. It's like they just videotaped the play very well. I don't want to mistake it, but it wasn't like, oh, look, let's go CGI Lin-Manuel Miranda to look like a cat or something. Right. Like they didn't do that. So the budget makes no sense. It's like they completely wasted the budget. Like the art design is bad. The scale of everything doesn't make any sense. And it's like inferior to what if we just went to Broadway and got out some camcorders and recorded the play, which I'm sure is wonderful. Again, you don't need a lot of plot. It's really more spectacle, song and dance, just like, you know, Avatar. Isn't great that plot, but is great as a amusement park spectacle story. Hmm. So
Cats. Sorry, I do in the tradition of Spotcast, I do have some fact check. It is an hour and 50 minutes in case people really wanted to know. It says here on December 21st, 2019, a mere 2 days after its release, Universal Pictures announced that they would be releasing a new version, updated CGI at an undisclosed time. And apparently there was a version where they did have visible buttholes, but that never saw the light of day, right?
Yeah, they said that they tried it, but it just was really not going to work, so they dumped it.
So Andrew Lloyd Webber was so affected by the disastrous reception of the movie that he ended up adopting a Havanese puppy and had the dog registered as a therapy pet. And when asked by an airline via a note asking whether he really needed the dog, Lloyd Webber responded, "Yes, just see what Hollywood did to my musical Cats." And the airline sent approval back with a note saying, "No doctor report required." And of course, I don't know if you can remember this, but Ricky Gervais said it was the worst thing to happen to Cats since dogs.
There we go. According to Wikipedia, this had a budget of 80 to 100 million. And remember, multiply it by 3 because you got, you know, marketing costs and everything, and a box office of 75.5. So even if we pretend that it was just word of mouth, they lost big time money just on that.
Well, it's because what's interesting too, in the fact check here, they were saying that the animators only had 6 months to do all that work. They had 2 months to do the promotion and then 4 months to finish the movie. They said it was brutal. 90-hour weeks, people sleeping under their desks.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I have independently seen that, like, it seems like they really chose the wrong director. And I don't just mean is like, I disagree with artistic choices, but the rumor says that the director didn't understand that for a CGI type film, you don't get to see full render. You're going to see animatics, right? You're going to see the wireframe version or the version that looks kind of like it's made out of like plastic, right? It's like, no, this looks terrible. I need to see the real thing. They're like, you know how much time and money it takes to render the full thing? Like you need to be good with watching the little CGI puppets move. And if you're not, we got to fix that. And then we can do all of the texture work and everything. So. It's insane that I see the release date was December 16, 2019. It's clear they wanted to hit the holiday season. Yeah. This is a movie that should have waited till the next one then, or started earlier.
Yeah, Tom Hooper, apparently, he was the director behind Les Miserables, which did really well, right? And in fact, the year before, he had won the Oscar for The King's Speech, right? And then he won, he got the Raspberry, the worst movie of the year, for this movie.
Yeah, so this is interesting, right? So you would say, hey, well, you know, The King's Speech, and then you got Les Mis, another play, seems good. I'm like, yes, if he had done it like the Broadway play, where...
Well, it was supposed to be animated, too, but apparently he wanted to do live action.
Okay. Yeah, I could see this being, like, you know, a DreamWorks film kind of thing. Illumination film. But once they went real life, having it be a CG-based film, you should have said, this guy will not know what he's doing. Because the King's Speech, it don't have no CGI. I'm sure it probably does, you know, color coding figure. The same thing with Les Mis. Like, I'm pretty sure they actually shaved Anne Hathaway's head. I don't think they CGI'd her head.
No, they did, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, this doesn't play to any of his strengths. Like, you'd want, like, I don't know, Peter Jackson to come in and do this right. You know, somebody who knows how to do, how do we do Hobbit-style scale? Make things, you know, in camera or CGI, whatever's cost effective, whatever looks good. And who knows, like, hey, guess what? I'm going to have to look at the animatics, get an idea. Do I like this? And then go on with it. So it's criminal how poorly this was done. So this was, I don't know, appropriately a good, you know, we struggled to find my weakness. I think we definitely chipped the armor right here.
We're okay, so, you know, obviously it's a tough list to think of off the top of your head, but is this the worst movie you've ever seen? Is it on the short list?
I don't believe it's the worst, but it's definitely on the short list. I'm gonna have to think about this. And now I'm unclear, you know, should we have a similar bet again? I'm like, what are you gonna do now? Jonathan, what's left? It's like, I'm basically, you know, the DC comic character Doomsday now. Like, I can't die from the same thing. Like, you have to come up with something all new to defeat me.
I was thinking more the opposite. I was thinking, oh dear God, if I lose a bet to Jaime now, I can't imagine how hard he's going to be looking for something really bad for me to watch to get revenge for this. But that will not stop me. I think we'll definitely have to keep the wagers coming to spread the pain around. It's absolutely admirable of you to honor the bet and take this one for the team. But I'm glad it made for at least a good conversation.
That's the nature of doing a podcast, I think.
Yep. Find each other's weaknesses and exploit them. Is that the point?
Yeah.
Sweep the leg. There you go. Sweep the leg.
Oh man. Well, I can't top that for my watch list, but I'll try and keep it moving. So over the past few episodes, I've been talking about doing my Stranger Things rewatch, since we are now a mere 2 weeks away from the beginning of the fifth and final season of Stranger Things. I did finish my rewatch of season 4, which obviously is the penultimate season. It definitely feels much more, you know, cohesive. I know that they filmed it in part around COVID and they had to take some breaks. So that gave the writers, the Duffer Brothers and the writers, a chance to sit down and really think about what they wanted to do. So it's got a lot more of a cohesive feel to it, although it is a bit of a leap to go from like the kind of existential but not defined monsters of the first three seasons to a much more, like, you know, he speaks, he walks, he talks villain in the fourth season, if you'll recall. But it definitely, you know, some great performances, some much improved special effects. You know, the episodes are a little bloaty at times. There's some, you know, they kind of have a tough time because they spread everybody out and then bring them all back together. So you really end up with like all these different storylines and you go long stretches without seeing certain characters. So it's a little bit unwieldy. And that's my biggest fear, I think, as I think ahead to season 5, is they've introduced all these characters now. There's not just the sort of the five kids from the first one. Now they've added all these other kids, and then they've added in the older kids, and then they've added in the adults. And so now you kind of have to figure out how they're going to balance all the storytelling to give, you know, a satisfying conclusion to all these different arcs. But I will say, having now rewatched the entire run so far, I am definitely excited for season 5, and I'm definitely feeling like it's going to be interesting to see how they land this plane after sort of all the build up and all the hype and all the stuff. I mean, this feels like it's it could either be terrific or it could be terrible. And I really hope that it's terrific because there has been so much enjoyment here. But yeah, it definitely feels like it wouldn't be hard to miss the landing on this one because there's just so much going on. And worst of all, like I didn't like how they killed a few of the characters, especially because they would introduce an ancillary character and then kill them off. They did that in multiple seasons. I wonder if, as we get down to the nitty gritty of the last season, if there'll be more high stakes, if they'll kill off some major characters and things like that, which, you know, again, having immersed in this again, I feel more attachment to some of them again. And I'm like, oh, but don't know, but ugh. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it lands. The other thing I flagged in here, and we talked about this, I think, previous episodes. So, they announced the Lego, Star Trek Enterprise. We knew that it was coming, and then they announced, finally, you know, they showed it off. There was, you know, trailers and commercials, and everybody was super excited that they finally had the first authorized Lego Star Trek set. It's the Enterprise D from Next Generation. Comes with the whole cast, including Data and Spot. It's really terrific. It's super expensive. It's $400, $500 Canadian almost for this set. It's huge, but that's a lot. And if you order it from Lego, you actually get, they throw in a shuttle with Ensign Ro alongside, which is a pretty cool little bonus gift if you order it from the Lego store. So if you're going to do it, she even has her little ear clip thing on the Lego figure, which is pretty cool. Mm. However, after a few days of this first announcement, then they started shipping them out. People started getting them. People started building them. And then they realized that there was a pretty massive problem with them, which is that there is a plaque that is supposed to be similar to the plaque that is found on the bridge that is, you know, as you would find on the corner of a fine building that basically explains the, you know, the founding of the building. This is, you know, obviously something they do on old ships. And in this circumstance, they have this little plaque that is supposed to say to boldly go where no one has gone before. And there is a spelling error. So it says to boldly go where no one has gone before. They lost an L. And the internet has been and social media has been pretty merciless about this mistake. And so, you know, I have not seen anything from Lego yet. I have, must admit, I didn't have time today to take a look. But I wonder if they're going to be sending these out to people who have purchased these so they can actually have the right one, if they're going to remake it, how they're going to do it, or if they're going to correct it for subsequent, you know, set releases. So if you get one of the first ones, you've got kind of a collector's item because it's going to have this spelling mistake in it. But yeah, anyways, it was a lot of people were like, you know, this is a real L for Star Trek, a real L for Lego, you know, dropping the L out of there boldly. But yeah, pretty goofy mistake for something that was so anticipated and so, you know, trumped up and excited when they were announcing it, to fall flat on its face like that so quickly was pretty funny.
Yeah, I just posted a link here with the picture of the boldly going.
Ugh. Fuck. Yeah. Yeah, we talked about it on our Slack channel the other day, but my goodness.
All right. Well, speaking of things we're looking forward to, The Running Man is coming out, and I think this weekend. And this is the Edgar Wright version. It's a more telling with the
Stephen King, yeah.
Stephen King book, and he read the book before the movie came out. So, you know, he read it when he was like, he said inappropriately young, at 12 or something. He was allowed to read Stephen King books, and yeah, he met Stephen King. He went and got Arnold Schwarzenegger's blessing on it, and they put Schwarzenegger's face on the $100 bill in this universe.
So. Yeah,
which is kind of cool. And there's an interview here I've got with Edgar Wright and on Seth Meyers. He was on two nights ago, so yeah, pretty good. So looking forward to that.
Yeah,
yeah, when that comes out in, like that, in the theaters this weekend. So. And that's about it for this time. So, hey, Jonathan, people want to get in touch with you. Where would they find you?
Oh, take a look on Blue Sky or on Instagram. I'm at JPK News, or you can head over to YouTube, youtube.com/@JPK.
All right. And Jaime, if people can get in touch with you, where would they find you?
I'm on Instagram as @devwithahair.
All right. Well, my name is Timitra, T-I-M-M-I-T-R-A. You can find me trolling on Blue Sky and sometimes on Mastodon and Threads and things like that. So I go to Threads for my humor fix for the day. Yeah. Until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
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 You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. If you have feedback or questions, you can get in touch with us on the website. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.